Even though that music is from Two Guys Gaming, hello and welcome. Whether you meant to or not, you found Noob's Book Club. I'm Sean, noob of all trades from Two Generations Gaming, and in this podcast series, I am reading and reacting to Jurassic Park, the classic novel by Michael Crichton. I've been off for probably a couple weeks now. I'm not entirely sure how long it's been, but I only have three more episodes to go for the book, and then I want to do the movie Versus. And then I can finally get into the Poppy War sometime in June. Probably only have the Poppy War and maybe some other short book before I do the new Dragonlance book in August, but that's okay. I'll figure out the schedule again and try to rearrange it going forward. In this episode, I'm starting the sixth iteration. It will be the first of two episodes for the sixth iteration, and the seventh iteration in the epilogue will get its own episode. And that's why I say I have three left, counting this one. As I always do, I will read a short synopsis from SparkNotes. Thank you again, SparkNotes, for that. You can find the link on the show notes. And then I will give my reaction to the chapter. Sixth iteration. System recovery may prove impossible. Ian Malcolm. Return. Grant and the kids take the go-kart back to the visitor center, which is in shambles. Wu, Harding, Muldoon, Sattler, Hammond, and Malcolm are all trapped in a room at the lodge as three raptors on the roof of the room slowly bite through the bars of the skylight. Sattler goes outside to distract the raptors while Grant makes a run for the generator, leaving the kids alone in the cafeteria. Sattler draws the attention of two more raptors, but it turns out that these two are merely distracting her while the raptors on the roof come to attack her from behind. Wu steps outside to warn Sattler what is happening. He is killed by a raptor that jumps from the roof, but Sattler escapes. Grant discovers Gennaro still alive and turns on the generator. A raptor sneaks into the cafeteria, but Tim locks it in the freezer. He and Lex flee to the control room and find a radio. Muldoon tells Tim they must turn on the electricity since none of the people who are still alive knows how to use the computers. Thank you again, SparkNotes, for that succinct summary. And now for my reaction. Body count. Well, Henry Wu, favorite son of Noob's Book Club, finally met his demise. I admit that I probably jumped the gun when it came to anointing him as real man of science. But first impressions last. Then, slowly and steadily, like the drip of water torture, the second, third, fourth, and so on impressions chip away at the facade. Then you're left with the shame of hero worship gone horribly wrong. I should have listened to my gut. I said at the beginning of the book that I liked movie Henry Wu better than the book. But then I let that impression color my view of him and think that he would evolve into a better character. Nope. He just kept getting exposed as just as short-sighted as the rest of the numbskulls on Hammond's team. And his stupidity led finally to a merciful death at the hand of the raptors. Rip in pieces, you absolute dumbass. Dinosaurs attack! Speaking of the raptors, they continued their starring role in this section. Big Rex stole the show for a little bit, but now, with her trank, the raptors get their turn again. It starts with an all-out assault on the lodge. Sattler then nearly gets caught while trying to distract them and plays a game of cat and mouse with them after retreating to the safety behind the fence. They all realize too late who the apex predator actually is, and that's how Henry Wu meets his demise. The raptors, parenthetically, well, one, also make it into the kitchen when Grant leaves the kids alone. Tim lures it into the freezer, and Lex helps to trap it in there. Meanwhile, back at the lodge, they chase Sattler onto the roof. She escapes by jumping into the pool. The raptors attack Harding, who tried to let her in through the roof access door. He survives, and she escapes back into the lodge. Overall, just a fun chapter for the raptors. A word about the science. Before he makes his unceremonious exit, Henry Wu talks a bit on the history of DNA and its effect, parenthetically, or lack thereof, and parenthetical, on behavior. Similar to his oversight regarding the hermaphroditism, his single-minded focus on just the DNA aspect of the project cursed him to overlook the finer details of cloning dinosaurs. Like, behavior for one, you know? Why worry if the murderous lizard chickens will try to murder anyone? We can make them dependent on lysine. That will solve it. Oh boy, quite a bit to unpack here. Save it for the finale. even as they face imminent death, at the capable claws of a pack of velociraptors, he pats himself on the back because the dinosaurs are breeding. That means he got the science of the DNA right. Excuse me, sir. Are you fucking kidding me? Like, seriously, what is this insane idea that we have of the immortality of ideas? Sure, you successfully cloned dinosaurs, but those same dinosaurs killed you. Isn't that ironic? Don't you think? Also, just straight up idiotic. I mean, I understand the pursuit of knowledge. I myself have dedicated my life to that very pursuit. But the singular-mindedness of anything is destructive. I know that's one of the themes of the book, but still, it rubs me the wrong way. And I'm sorry that you have to keep listening to it, so let's just move on. Real men of science. Well, Malcolm is a morphine-addled mess. Henry Roux's obsessive single-mindedness led to his predictable death. The only quote-unquote heroes we have left are Ellie Sattler and Alan Grant. I put heroes in quotes there because up to this point they all have fallen. So it's simply a precaution against something happening with either or both of them. Not that I expect that. While a good writer, Crichton tips his hand eventually. Neither his pro nor his antagonists are particularly complex. Grant and Sattler work for the good of the group. Henry Roux, Hammond, and even Malcolm work only for their selfish ends. So, the pitfalls that plague them will not befall Grant or Sattler. The quote-unquote worst that Grant did was lock himself in the maintenance area behind the waterfall, and there was no malice there. He simply made a mistake. Also, this chapter proves that theory. Grant succeeds where others failed by restoring the power, and Sattler keeps the raptors distracted long enough for him to get the job done. So, Drs. Grant and Sattler, we salute you as real men of science. Damn it. Only now am I realizing the unintentional sexism of the title of this section. Man, if popular enough, I'd surely be canceled. I swear to you, I never even considered such a thing. Damn you, patriarchy. I gotta go watch Barbie again. Independent of that faux pas and my lapses in judgment earlier in the book, I truly do appreciate the efforts of both Grant and Sattler. I should have been singing your praises from the beginning of the book. Maybe as a concession, I retire this section and come up with something different for the rest of the series. But what? Oh well, a discussion for another time. What I liked least. Other than the things I discussed, I'm having difficulty thinking of something. Okay, I thought of something. You don't know, but I took some time to teach and that allowed my brain to marinate with the subject. So yay for that! The only thing that I can think of for this section is that the section was just one chapter. I know that's been the case for a while now, but in this section, I really noticed it. I think because I scanned ahead and saw that the next section split into several chapters, that tricked my brain into thinking that this chapter slash section was longer than it actually was. Plus, being so close to the end of the book and looking forward to the next book, The Poppy War, it just dragged on a bit. I don't mean to suggest that it's boring in any way. To the contrary, I like the chapter very much. But it just seems so long. Does that make sense? Probably not. These rambling diatribes rarely do. I should probably just cut my losses at this point. No reason to try to explain or make sense of it. Let's just Belichick it. Parenthetically, it is what it is, and parenthetical, and move on to what I liked best. It's not much of a surprise, so I don't need any more intro. What I liked best. Are you expecting me to say everything else here? I said it was not much of a surprise, and I used that one a few times before. If so, wrong! I mean, I already told you that I enjoyed this chapter, in spite of the length as I tried to explain in the previous section. I failed in that explanation, as I discussed, and I said I'd move on. While it doesn't seem like it, this is me moving on. Because, following up on the thought that I enjoyed the chapter, I absolutely 100% did. Crichton told one hell of a fun story this time. But I can be more specific in my praise. Have I given you enough time to come up with another guess? I really want you to try to guess. Either pause here, or I will give you a few more moments. Got it yet? Yes, I mentioned something similar previously. I know you got it now. You're all smart cookies. I feel safe giving it away. That's right. I'm talking about the Velociraptors. Similar to the episode about the Tyrannosaur, this is exactly what we want from a novel named Jurassic Park, right? You want dinosaurs attacking people. Hell, I wanted it so badly that I added two sections, Body Count and Dinosaurs Attack. Even better than the Tyrannosaur chapter, the raptors straight up terrorize mofos this time. The T-Rex just wins by being big and dumb and overpowering its prey. Even the juvenile Rex, who likes to play with his food, mainly gets the upper hand by being big and dumb and ugly. Okay, I made up that last one. I'm sure he's a handsome boy. The raptors, on the other hand, even though they rival humans in size, probably outmuscle them, they use their smarts to meticulously dismantle their prey's resolve. I might be unintentionally anthropomorphizing the raptors. What can I say? Yes, my favorite dinosaur is the T-Rex, but I have a grudging respect for the raptors. You have to respect a foe that can match you on some level or another. I mean, raptors aren't as smart as humans, but they have wits, or whatever. What's the euphemism for intelligent animals? Let's go with wits. So, reading about the raptor attack made me happy beyond belief. You just can't beat a good raptor attack. And Crichton gave us several this time around. And now for my final thoughts. Quinn said he skipped over some parts of the book. This surprised Liam. But I can see why. While a good book, laid on the science a little thick. And the introduction went on entirely too long. But now that we made it into the action, there's plenty of it. The only complaint I have now is that we're almost at the end. Oh, Malcolm seems a bit too obsessed with taking out the science. What's up with that dude? We're going to take down cronyism and unregulated capitalism, comrade.
You are the chosen one!
As always, thanks for listening. You can find us, if you haven't already yet, www.twoguysgaming.net. We have articles. I did a top 10 article for Mario this week. Last week I did my comics. I just got my comics again, so not next week, but the week after I'll do comics. I haven't done an article on Fallout in a while. I'll try to get back on track with that one so that I can give you the rest of my thoughts on that series. There is no other podcast, but Chris and I are talking about getting together to play some Magic, so maybe we can discuss plans to record again when we do that. There's a link to our socials, including our YouTube, which is not very active right now. The end of school is kicking my butt a little bit, as the lateness of this proves. But I will try to get that up and running again also next month in June. I should be back with this series at some point this week, I'm hoping, because I have Monday off. And I want to get this done as soon as possible so that I can move on to the Poppy War. I will talk to you then. Bye, guys.
We are two guys gaming.